Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. At a recent Iowa high school basketball game, a boys' game, the visiting team had to endure racist chants by some rival students in the stands. It happened in northwest Iowa when the Storm Lake Tornadoes traveled to Spencer to play against the Tigers there. Now, the schools have very different student bodies. Spencer has about 1,900 mostly white students. The Storm Lake School District has 2,400 students, and the large majority of whom are non-white. Well, this half, we want to talk about the incident a little bit, talk about how it was dealt with, and how common this is across the state, what it indicates about how the national immigration debate is playing out in Iowa schools. Joining us, first of all, Carl Turner. He's superintendent of Storm Lake High School. Carl Turner, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Introduce us. Some may not be familiar with Storm Lake. You have incredible diversity. Introduce us quickly to your town.
Yeah, we're a very diverse community. Our school system, we have about 84% non-Caucasian students, and we're about 24 different languages spoken. So it's really an amazing place, and a lot of people say we've got the whole world right here in northwest Iowa and Storm Lake. So it's been we've got great kids and a really nice community, and we've had the opportunity to become more and more diverse over the years, and we haven't got it all figured out, but we're really working hard to try to make sure that we're an inclusive community.
Mm-hmm. Wow, 24 different languages in the little town of Storm Lake. That is amazing.
Yeah, it is quite amazing. I think when I first started here 7 years ago, we had 18 languages, and it seems like we just continue to increase the number of languages. It does cause a little bit of, you know, we have to be very creative. We have a lot of kids that come to us not speaking any English at all. So about 60% of our kids are involved in some sort of English language instruction. So every day we receive kids that from different parts of the world or different parts of the country that give us an opportunity to grow as a district and figure out how we're going to meet kids' educational needs.
And they're being drawn to Storm Lake, being recruited there, adults, to work in the meatpacking industry.
Yeah, at first it was really that way, you know, that we had that Tyson, which is our biggest employer in town. We have both Tyson Turkey and Tyson Pork. We also have Rembrandt, which is north of town that does processed eggs. We've had a lot of people move here because they found that Storm Lake is very friendly to diversity.
Let's talk about the unfortunate incident that happened between these two schools earlier this month on a Friday night basketball game. Now, these two schools, Storm Lake and Spencer, have an intense rivalry in athletics. What happened that Friday night?
Well, you're right, Ben. We really do have an intense rivalry in athletics. We really enjoy beating Spencer, and they enjoy beating us in all activities and sports. So basically what happened was, the spirited rivalry, some students decided to take it to a personal level, and that ended up causing some situations. I felt like that the Spencer school administration was on it really quick. They dealt with it really quickly. And I think it kind of more of what occurred that evening just was kind of a compound of a variety of things that had occurred over the last couple of times that we'd got together in sporting situations. But like I said, it really what happened was, instead of it being just a regular rivalry, some of the student body of Spencer decided to get personal, and then at that point I believe that the Spencer administration stepped in and dealt with it very quickly and very well, and but there still, as a result of that, there were some stressful situations and some kids that were hurt as a result of that. So
let's talk a little more specific. According to the reports I have, and you can confirm this or not, I don't know what you heard if you were at the game.
I was at the game, yeah.
So the reports I'm seeing chanting slogans against your Storm Lake players, such as go back to where you came from and lock your car doors.
We've had an incident earlier in the spring where we had one of our players that had made a poor decision and decided to take a car that was not his, and so that was kind of the genesis of that shaking the car keys and telling people to lock their doors. Mm-hmm. And I think that could have occurred with any kid that had made a. But, you know, of course, it was a Sudanese young man, and as a result, that one didn't go very well. But, again, the Spencer administration stepped in real quickly. We had some of the Spencer student body that had dressed up in a USA theme, and I think with the USA theme and the chant of go back where you came from, those didn't really blend real well together.
Well, right, and, right. I mean, it gets to the point, a larger point of patriotism. What is patriotism? I mean, wearing patriotic attire at a sporting event in itself is certainly not a problem, but you're saying in the context it was.
Yeah, in the context, because I think that, you know, the situation we could be in as similar position if kids wanted to dress up in red, white, and blue and the administration didn't allow them to, you know, we could, with the way that things are going now, especially the NFL and those kind of things, that could be perceived by some people as, well, why wouldn't you let kids be patriotic? The issue is just, it's just all about context. There were some things that were reported. I was at the game that I didn't notice, which means to me that they weren't really as overt as the report made them sound.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I felt like Spencer administration dealt with it really quickly. And
let me ask you about the students at whom these chants were directed, your students on the court. Have you offered them support?
We definitely have. We also use it as a teachable moment because we had a situation where we had one of our kids that he got a technical foul, well-deserved technical foul, because he was there was kind of a little bit of pushing going in the court, and that he had blocked one of the Spencer players' shots, and then he said something to the player right in front of our coach and right in front of the official, and he received a technical, and our coach benched him immediately, and he didn't play the rest of the game. So it was a teachable moment of that, you know, we just don't treat other people that way. The whole situation is that you can't control what happens to you. You can control how you react to it.
Right.
So we've used that really well. But then, you know, my job as the superintendent of schools in Storm Lake is to support our kids. So we're definitely going to support the kids, because it's hard for me, a 60-year-old white guy, to, you know, I've got to try to get into my diverse school population shoes and find out where they're coming from, where their families are coming from, because it's not just that night. It's, you know, like I said earlier, it's kind of a compound of a variety of events, not just at Spencer, but just on a day-to-day basis with the way the media is right now and the anti-immigration theme that's kind of going on. Our families and our students are feeling a lot of stress as a result of that.
Well, let's not just aim at the media. We have politicians specifically.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think that's where it's coming from, right? Yeah, the media is just reporting the news. You know, I understand that. And it's just right now that we have a lot of adults that aren't giving our kids very good examples of how to treat each other. You know, things that happen in the national news in regards to DACA and immigration policy, when you have 84% of your kids that are non-Caucasian, that really resonates here in Storm Lake. So we
right.
have to give our kids support all the time.
And when you hear from the stands, the rival team from a predominantly white school chanting, go back to where you came from, in the midst of this debate about DACA, where go back to where you came from can mean being deported from the only place you've ever known, right?
most definitely, and that's the context. You've hit the nail on the head. You know, comments like that, when you're in a situation where it could really be a reality, it really hits your insides hard.
If you just joined us, I'm talking with Carl Turner, superintendent of the Storm Lake School District. Incredibly diverse community. He mentioned at the outset 24 different languages spoken in Storm Lake and represented in the Storm Lake schools. And 84% of the residents of Storm Lake are non-white, which is an interesting situation, Superintendent Turner, because that's pretty much the reverse image of Iowa as a whole, where 80-some percent of Iowans are white. You have 80-some percent of your residents being non-white.
Yeah, definitely. We definitely are a unique community. I think, you know, there's been a lot of people who have told me we're the most diverse school district in the state of Iowa. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I think you have to talk to maybe West Liberty about that. They're quite...
Yeah, we'll compete for that title, but it's definitely... it's been just a real blessing for all of our kids to have the opportunity to, you know, be together in school. It really helps them mm-hmm. prepare for the world that's arriving in the future.
Right. You say a blessing, but we have a national conversation going where you know full well that many in this conversation do not see it as a blessing. What misconceptions do you find people have about communities like Storm Lake with large, diverse communities?
Well, I think it's like everything else that, you know, for whatever reasons, it seems like that the negative as opposed to the positive comes to the forefront. And I think that in every culture, every race, including Caucasians, there are some people that don't make very good decisions, and sometimes we paint the brush with that those poor decisions that are made. But by and large, the majority are really great people that are just trying to do good things for their families. So I guess it's the term stereotype. They are prejudiced. You judge before you know. And I just always tell people, just give us a chance, get to know us, and you'll find out. Everybody that's been here has left a better person as a result of it.
You mentioned earlier in the conversation, you know, you're a 60-some-year-old white guy. So I don't know if diversity comes or has in your life come easy to you, if you grew up in a diverse community, if you've learned a great deal in your sort of long view as a resident of Storm Lake. Have you always lived in Iowa?
No, I've not always lived in Iowa. I went to high school in Washington State in a very diverse community in an agricultural area where we had a lot of migrant farm workers, and I had the opportunity to go to school and live in a community that was diverse. And then I went to college in California and, again, was exposed to diversity. But I've been in Northwest Iowa for a really long time. I think I'm just finishing, like, my 30th year in Iowa because I moved here in 83. And so you're right, the majority of Iowa is not as diverse as us, but when I came here 7 years ago, I chose to come to Storm Lake because I was really intrigued by the community, by the diversity, and by just the community in general. And it's been a really good move for me because it's helped me to grow as a person. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I've come to the realization that it's not simple. It's really complex. But the issue is that when you have the mindset that when you talk to families from a variety of different cultures, they all want the same thing for their kids. They want them to be safe. They want them to learn. They want them to have a positive future. And I think it's all about, it comes down to the golden rule, is that everybody just wants to be treated with dignity and respect. And if you can treat others with dignity and respect, or treat them the way that you would want to be treated, then I think you're going in a positive direction. And realize that anytime you have people together, there's always going to be issues that surface. And then it's just all about your approach to that. Do you look at those as opportunities, or do you look at those as obstacles? And I just think that our mindset here in Storm Lake Schools and Storm Lake Community is to look at the opportunities as opposed to the obstacles. Mm-hmm. So,
wow, with your long view, Carl Turner of Northwest Iowa and Storm Lake 30-plus years, I want to ask you to briefly cast your vision into the future. How do you hope Northwest Iowa and Storm Lake will be in the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years?
Well, I think that what I'd like to see for us to just try to continue to figure out how we can, I think treat other people the way we want to be treated and realize that similarities and differences are both okay. That's what makes the world a really a great place. So I just hope that we get a better understanding of each other and then how we can help each other become better people and realize that in Northwest Iowa, we've really experienced a lot of growth in our school district because we have become more diverse. And a lot of our communities in Iowa they're dying a slow death because they're getting older and they're not becoming more diverse. And if you're not close to a metro area in Iowa, chances are you're not experiencing any growth as a community or a school district. And I think we've got to realize that if we really, truly want Iowa to exist in the future, we're going to have to embrace diversity because that's how we're going to experience the growth that we need to become what we hope to become in the future. So,
Carl Turner, have you, as superintendent of the Storm Lake School District, had a one-on-one conversation or with a group of Latino students that really stayed with you, perhaps emotionally stayed with you about the position the students are in?
I've had discussions with our Latino students on a daily basis. I try to get out and see students, and we just got really great kids. But a few years ago, I had the opportunity to go to the National Hispanic Institute with about six of our sophomore students, and these were it's a leadership organization for Hispanic students to try to, encourage them to continue their education, how important college is and how important it is for them to, to embrace their culture and how they can make a difference in the future and what are some of the things that they need to do that. And so that was just very intriguing to me to be with kids from all over the country, Hispanic kids that just are tremendous leaders and stuff. And to me, that's the thing is that we've got to tap into that diversity because they're our future. I really do believe that. I believe they're our future, and we need to put them in those kind of situations. So, yeah, we talk about it a lot in regards to how can kids in general make a difference. And it's really important to me, and I always encourage our kids to do this, is not to lose their culture. Because, throughout history, we've always tried to Americanize different cultures. And to me, it's really cool when a kid can maintain their culture, keep their language, and still be able to contribute to the American society. And I just think it's just going to make us so much more powerful if we're able to encourage kids to do so.
Do you have in the community there in Storm Lake plans? We're in a countdown phase with DACA, undocumented workers. I'm sure with the diverse population you have there that you have a number of Dreamer students. I don't know if you know the number, but undocumented parents and so forth. Are there plans in the community?
Oh, yeah,
should it come?
We've been ever since, even prior to the election results, the presidential election results, we knew that either way that, there would be some potential friction. And so we started as a community having community forums and trying to figure out how we were going to, what practices and policies were going to be put in place so that we could support our families and help our families out. So, yeah, definitely we've been working on that. And
what are some actions that would be taken? Should deportations, should ICE come in a big way to carry through with deportations?
Well, the first thing that we've done is we've, as a school district, we've talked about, okay, if immigration officials would show up at school, how would we handle it? And so we've got some specific protocol in place in regards. It's just like any other situation that typically when people outside of the school want to come and see students, we have different practices in place. We're just applying those practices for that. We're also, there's been discussions with kids, and this is really what's caused a lot of tension for kids, is there are some kids that just learned during this time that their folks were undocumented. They didn't know before this time, because it was never a discussion that you had to have. So what we've been trying to do is really encourage parents to say, okay, if something was to happen, like happened in Postville a few years back, what are your plans? What are you going to do, you know, if you know, something was to occur that you weren't available for your kids, what are you going to do? It really does create a, you know, it really does create, the rhetoric right now is really creating a lot of tension in our community with a lot of our families that they're having to have plans in place. And that's, it kind of reminds you of back in the, during the Cold War era where kids had to get under their desk, you know, afraid that there might be a nuclear attack at any time. And sort of the, you know, the same kind of, you know, position now has to be, is you just got to be ready in case of those things do occur. So,
before we go in the last minute or so here, I understand you've communicated your community's concerns to Congressman Steve King of the 4th District of Iowa. What was that like? Or you were at a community forum?
It was Representative King had invited a bunch of us from the community, from Storm Lake community, to sit with him and talk about immigration, which I really appreciated the forum. And he would really listen to what we had to say. And when it was my opportunity to talk to him, I just told him that I was really concerned that kids were getting punished for their folks' decisions, you know, that the whole DACA thing, and just that, you know, I just felt like that there had to be a, you know, there, it shouldn't have to be such an extreme policy that we would send kids back to places they'd never been before or hadn't been since they were really young kids.
And how did he respond, the congressman?
His response was basically that you know, that the law has been broken and the law needs to be enforced. So, you know, he's pretty much black and white approach. And to me, I think there's a lot of gray in there, you know, that we, I don't think we have to take that approach, because we've got kids that, I think that I'm just hoping that the whole aspect of compromise will happen as the Congress gets together, that we'll be able to figure out something that'll work, that will help our families and reduce the stress that a lot of them are facing at this point.
Okay, Carl Turner, superintendent of the Storm Lake School District. Thank you for your time, sir.
Hey, thank you very much for the opportunity.
Coming up after a short break, I'll talk with the Des Moines Register's Kyle Munson about other worrying school incidents that tie in with immigration in the state. We'll also take a closer look at the overnight towns just announced for RAGBRAI 2018. That's after this short break. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
And we're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Perhaps you heard our first half hour focusing on Storm Lake, where a recent high school basketball game, an unfortunate incident, the visiting team had to endure some racist chants by rival students in the stands. We talked about that with the superintendent of Storm Lake Schools. Let's now welcome Kyle Munson back to our program, Iowa columnist for the Des Moines Register. Hi, Kyle.
Oh, hey, Ben. Thanks. Great to be here.
Great to have you on the program again. In a few minutes, we want to, of course, talk about RAGBRAI, overnight towns announced this past weekend. But I know you've been writing and thinking a lot about this and some other worrying incidents in the state connected with our heated immigration debate and the fiery rhetoric that's been connected to it for over
a year now. Let's talk about Creston, the Southwest Iowa community, where back in September, I don't know how many of our listeners saw this, but a picture of five people. It's a dreadful picture. Why don't you describe it?
Yeah, so what you're referring to, it's a photo that shows five students there from Creston High and football players who were shown in white hoods with a burning cross. One was holding a rifle. So it was textbook racist imagery.
Confederate flag in the background.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, your discussion with, you know, Superintendent Carl Turner was about the situation between these two rival teams, but here you had players on the same team, you know, wrapped up in this drama. So these were five white students, and their quarterback is an African American kid who, you know, really, so this thing erupted in Creston and across the country, of course, and he was just remarkably mature in how he responded to this, you know, saying he was shocked. You know, he'd been to the homes of some of these kids, and they were his friends. So that was another school district that really had to grapple with these tough questions on race as some of these same debates are happening all around the nation.
Right. So the Creston Community School District really, the students immediately kicked off the football team. I think some other disciplinary actions taken as well. We had the other incident. This is the Forest City Radio. These were adults, I think. Two people fired from that radio station after commenting on an internet stream about the Eagle Grove basketball players' heritages. Eagle Grove, another place of high diversity, a lot of Latino Iowans, residents there as well. This was amazing. One of the announcers I'm reading from your column, as Trump would say, go back to where you came from. This is broadcast. The other one, just to get the other quote here, the other one saying, well, some would say that. Some days I feel like that, too. Go back to where you came from. So this is what? You asked in your column, who, if anybody, should we blame for helping to perpetuate a climate where a pair of basketball announcers would consider such casual racism to be so utterly normal?
Yeah, that was just, that was just a confusing instance all around. This was during a broadcast, but these comments in question were, the mic was still hot and it was heard online. And then, of course, that was easily captured and people were able to distribute it everywhere on social media, and it just, again, sparked a firestorm. And here is another situation similar to Storm Lake and Spencer, where you have, you know, a more diverse student body like Eagle Grove versus a wider student body like Forest City. And it's interesting, in talking to Storm Lake officials now, in the wake of what they're dealing with and what you've been talking about in the last half hour, officials and the educators from Eagle Grove have actually been visiting their district because Eagle Grove is going to be receiving a fresh wave of even more diverse students. They're expecting that because of more meatpacking jobs coming to their area, right?
Right.
And I just find it interesting that Storm Lake, not only do they have to, some other districts around the state have to weather incidents like this, or their students have to really, you know, stand up and try to recover from whatever sort of racist flare-up happens. But then they get this from the other end, too, where they're sometimes constantly studied for how are you handling diversity, what's it like, and it's all very well-meaning. Those are well-meaning interactions, but it also, you know, so they kind of sometimes I feel like they can feel like they're always under scrutiny, be it good or bad.
Right, you know? And you mentioned a key word there, diversity. Our country is having a real debate about what was once considered by many to be a good and pretty much only a good. Our Congressman Steve King in the 4th District, you quoted him a tweet, I believe, in your column. His tweet, assimilation has become a dirty word to the multiculturalist left. Assimilation, not diversity, is our American strength. So there is a difference of opinion, I guess, about what America represents, what America's identity is, who we let in, who stays out.
Yeah, I've really, you know, as a columnist, I've struggled with this, and so all this stuff we're talking about takes on some very pointed complexions in Representative King's district. When he was I mean, he's been tweeting pretty frequently now in recent weeks and months. And, yeah, he's hung up on assimilation. And, you know, I have no problem with the whole notion of melting pot, right? We're in this melting pot country, and we all – I learned that as kids,
You
know, Schoolhouse Rock, whatever. But I feel like the way that this word assimilation is being leveraged, I mean, I hear that and I go, well, are you going to tell Orange City and Pella that they should assimilate and tear down the windmills and lace curtains and get rid of the wooden shoes? Is that what you're talking about?
Right.
Because I feel like if you once you start going down that path, how do you not – I mean, how does assimilation not become selective and based on race?
Mm-hmm. So, Kyle Munson of the Des Moines Register, Iowa columnist, let's – shift perhaps a brighten the conversation to something that is
right.
little bit happier in terms of a theme. Onawa, Denison, Jefferson, James, Ames, Newton, Sigourney, Iowa City, and Davenport, those are overnight cities announced by your Des Moines Register just this last weekend. The 2018 Register's annual Great Bike Ride Across Iowa. I assume, Kyle, you'll be on it again this year?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, and you know, I think I'm going to see some you know, some public radio friends and all kinds of people. And
you
I know
may
that
see
we've
me.
Crossed.
I'll be on it again this year.
There we go. That's wonderful. Yeah, I know we've crossed paths time and again on Wright Bright and
shared a piece of pie or two. Mm-hmm.
That's right. That's right. Part of the summer tradition. Yeah, we had a great time in downtown Des Moines last weekend for the Wright Bright route announcement. Thousands of people, and it was paired with the Iowa Bicycle Expo, which was great. Yeah, this is the 46th. Wright Bright, and it's just amazing to sort of contemplate that what a summer staple it's become, and it was just accidentally created by a couple of you know journalists whom I revere. 428 miles, the fourth flattest, the seventh shortest, so you know it cuts right through the middle. But yeah, it's being called the Cyhawk Wright Bright because we visit both Ames and Iowa City for the first time, and Iowa City has not received Wright Bright in like 42 years.
Yeah, what is that? What is that about? I mean, it's been we've gone through Iowa City recently, but an overnighter hasn't happened in Iowa City. Did Iowa City get on someone's black sheep list or something?
Yeah, I'm going to have to. I'll try to do some public records requests and see if there's some illegal payment coming out of Ames trying to keep it out of Iowa City. But no, we came close. We came close. We were in Coraville a few years ago,
but this was the first time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the first time in Iowa City. So I think people are going to have fun with that. Technically, you know, every day on Wright Bright has a different jersey theme or, you know, just a whatever, you know, encouraging people to kind of play along. And Friday is the College Spirit Day. But because of this whole Cyhawk thing and this rivalry week, I have a feeling that it's going to be College Rivalry, College Spirit Day every day on Wright Bright this year.
We'll see, Kyle. Before we talk with a couple representatives from the overnight cities, Onawa and the Iowa City Coralville area, let's talk. I wanted to mention just a really eloquent column, in-depth column that you wrote recently about Donald Call, renowned journalist. Of course, anybody growing up in Iowa knows that name, Donald Call, also co-founder of the Wright Bright. You wrote about in your column the sad news that Donald Call of 83 has a terminal illness, doesn't expect to live beyond this year, right?
Yeah, so yeah, it's kind of a bittersweet year for Wright Bright in that sense as it approaches, you know, half a century. Donald Call, one of the co-founders, he's been battling cancer, and it's to the point where he doesn't, you know, expect to see more than you know, one more Wright Bright. I mean, from afar, he hasn't ridden it in years, but yeah, an inspiring guy, and he was a renowned columnist for decades, a political columnist, and based in D.C. for the Register and other newspapers. So one of the co-founders is staring that down. And then recently, John Karras, who lives in Des Moines, and mm-hmm. he was around Saturday for some of the festivities, his wife, Ann Karras, whom you know we refer to as the First Lady of Wright Bright, she passed away last month, and she was a huge founding, organizing force on the ride early on, too. And so she is going to be, this Wright Bright is dedicated to her formally, and so that's a big deal. I mean, another sign of how ingrained this institution has become that we're to the point where the founders, the founders are getting older and it's sad and, you know, and they're facing, some of these end of life issues.
Right. Donald Call, you quote in your column too about a modest sort of take on being a co-founder of RAGBRAI. He said that it was just waiting to happen, and we uncovered it.
Yeah, I always loved, you know, they just, that's what I love about this whole, this whole thing, is that you could not, a committee could not have devised this, and they were just self-described wannabe hippies looking for a way to let, you know, get the newsroom budget to allow them to go have fun in the summer.
Yeah.
And here we are.
You know? A quick word about Donald Cawley. He must have been an inspiration for you, for you as a columnist now for several years. What do you admire most about him? Or perhaps a better question, if you've never written an art or read an article by Donald Cawley, how do you describe the way he? Well, he's got polarizing columns, but they're also very humorous.
Yeah, you know, yeah. There's so many mentors and predecessors I revere, and you know, people like, you know, Chuck Offenberger, who's also involved with RAGBRAI. Cawley specifically is such a rascal, and I would say one thing about him: you definitely go back and we have a couple of his old columns we posted online when I wrote this piece you're referring to. His prose is so sharp and so lean, like it's almost like there's not a wasted word, and he has kind of like this needle precision with his humor and with skewering, you know, people that he loved to skewer, like say President Nixon or whomever it was. He had, you know, some of the sharpest tools in his kit to do that, and his sentences are just clean, pure, and sharp and concise.
Kyle Munson with us of the Des Moines Register, Iowa columnist there. And we want to welcome the director of Onawa Economic Development, Clint Weaver, to our program now as we come up to the end of the hour. Clint Weaver, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Starting off RAGBRAI again this year, Onawa, for those who don't know, is a large town, largest town on the Iowa side of the Missouri River. This is, sits, what, between Council Bluffs and Sioux City. You have about 3,000 residents, right?
Yes, that's correct, about 3,000.
Mm-hmm. Six times. This will be your sixth time hosting RAGBRAI. You're real veterans now. Did you hear the announcement and let out a big yawn or what, Clint?
Oh, no, there was no big yawn. There was actually some elation and jumping up and down and lots of excitement.
All right. Well, what's in front of you as far as preparation? What are you most focused on, getting those – ready for those 10,000 riders and their support crews?
Well, for the most part, it's getting the businesses on board with a direction for being able to service that number of people. Being a town of only 3,000 and having an influx of 15,000 to 25,000 people in our town is going to be quite a task.
Right.
For the most part, it's making sure those businesses know what's coming and how to handle it, and then also having places to put all the tents and the bicycles and park the extra cars and create some entertainment for them while they're here before they take off on Sunday morning.
Right. As Director of Economic Development in the town, Clint, what is your best guess as far as the economic impact of having that many riders start the 2018 RAGBRAI in your town?
Oh, my goodness. It's a huge shot in the arm for the economy, considering the number of people that will be patronizing our restaurants and our bars and going through our small shops and coffee shops. And actually, we have a new racetrack in town that will be opening this spring, and they have a three-day event that's going to be happening that same weekend. So there will be lots of entertainment for them.
Kyle, can you add anything to that about the economics of this? I mean, having a town of 3,000 receive this entourage is wonderful, isn't it? I mean, it's chaotic.
Oh, yeah.
And you may not say when you don't have a room to move and you're wrestling for that last piece of pie, you may not say it's wonderful, but it is, right? If you're in economic development, of course, in that town.
Oh, yeah, and especially the opening town. I mean, that's where the Missouri River really kind of gets lavished with the biggest shot, because you have all these people that gather early on the weekend before, and they really stay and they linger. And so you have the bike expo and everything else. You know, by the time you get to the Mississippi River, when we get to Davenport, there'll be a lot going on there too, but the RAGBRAI crowd tends to kind of dip their tires and disperse. So, Yeah, you know, Clint, your town is going to, especially now that you mentioned with this three-day racetrack event, it's going to be a huge party to start the whole show.
Well, let's also talk to Clint Pfeiffer, Director of Marketing and Communications for the Iowa City Coralville Convention and Visitors Bureau. Hi, Nick.
Hello.
So you will be, Iowa City will be the overnight stop for Friday, July 27th. Riders coming in from Sigourney, which is, what, about 60 miles by this route from Iowa City. I don't know if you heard Kyle and I talking about it. Kyle's got some research to do. Maybe you can help him out. Any idea why it's taken 42 years? We have to go back to the administration of President Gerald Ford.
Before Star Wars.
Before Star Wars. Oh my! Was there a planet before Star Wars? I don't know. Can you shed any light on that, Nick?
I wish I could. No, I'm not sure why Iowa City has been passed up or hasn't invested in it in that amount of time. But we're very excited about it coming this year.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyone who's watched Iowa City over the last few years will know, not just in the last 42 years, but in the last decade, Iowa City has gone through an enormous amount of change in terms of construction, building, and new things going on. Tell us, where will things be happening for RAGBRAI in Iowa City?
Right now, we're anticipating a lot of the camping to happen in City Park, which is right around on the Iowa River, and then up the river, or down the river, I should say, to the south, our new Riverfront Crossings Park, which is just south of downtown, and then down towards Napoleon Park and Terry Trueblood Park, which is all along the river.
Mm-hmm.
All the entertainment to still be housed right in downtown Iowa City, where the hub of everything happens.
Right. You mentioned downtown Iowa City. I understand major construction in Iowa City beginning this summer, with a lot of underground plumbing being replaced. That it's not a little job by any means. That will complicate things, won't it?
Only slightly. The Ped Mall will be ripped up, so the people that are used to seeing the Ped Mall and the bars and restaurants in that two block span will take on a little bit different look. But that we've got great plans in place for how we can navigate through that, and RAGBRAI is going to be a big boon for those businesses that might be hurting a little bit because of the construction this summer. This is going to be another great way to get people into those areas.
Mm-hmm. Nick Pfeiffer, this is your first go around with this sort of thing?
This is my first go around being chair of the publicity committee. But luckily, I've been in the community and was able to volunteer, actually on the past two Coralville stops. So, mm-hmm. And we're fortunate in Iowa City to have Coralville and North Liberty having experienced RAGBRAI fairly recently. So we'll have a good resource to turn to for some information.
Well, you know, Kyle's a great resource too. I'm sure Clint is too, being in the town, the sixth time hosting. Kyle, if you're going to tell if you haven't done it for 42 years, you may have forgotten how to do it, right? So, speaking of RAGBRAI, of course, do you have any suggestions? Have you written a column about like do's and don'ts for RAGBRAI towns, overnight towns, annoyances or things that you have to look at? You know, if you haven't, you should. But I'm just asking you at the spur of the moment.
That's a good, it's on my list now. You should, maybe I'll send it to you to give it a good edit.
Yeah, so, well, yeah. We could. I could add some to the list. It seems, you know, when you have a small town, isn't that right, Clint, there in Onawa, town of 3,000, it's hard to imagine what happens to a town of 3,000 when 10,000 plus riders plus entourage come to town, right? You see a lot of anxious faces, or you can if you don't have some veterans in the crowd, right, Clint?
Exactly. We do. We are lucky in the fact that we have a number of people that will be on our committees that have been in town and been on those same committees for previous events. But as far as the town goes, you know, we shut down the main highway that goes through town and create space for a beer garden and a band and those sort of things.
Right.
So, yes, it changes our little town dramatically. There won't be many people driving cars through town. You'll just be walking.
And that'll be nice because it's in the spirit of RAGBRAI to be on two wheels, not motorized and on four.
Yep. I did have one brainstorm for Iowa City that just occurred to me. You know, he's talking about these beautiful, you know, campground areas along the river. You could have a Cyhawk RAGBRAI Rider flag football game, you know, between ISU and Hawkeye alumni, and you know, for bragging rights. So that's
a good one. What about a dunking booth? One for the Hawks to throw the ball and dunk the Cyclones, and then the other is the reverse. Wouldn't that be fun?
That's perfect.
It could be. It could be. I'm worried about the safety of anybody getting a little too aggressive on anything. You know.
Have them side by side so you hear the cheers go back and forth. All right. Thanks, Kyle Munson of the Des Moines Register, Clint Weaver of Onawa, and Nick Pfeiffer of the for Iowa City and Coralville Convention and Visitors Bureau. Nick, Clint, and Kyle, thanks for chatting with us about RAGBRAI 2018. Looking forward to
it.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Ben Stanton, with help today from Lulu Dewey. Catherine Perkins is our executive producer. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.